This is Pushing the Odds on SB Nation Radio, live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios in Las Vegas. Here's Matt Perrault.
Nobody's crying. We're not begging for anything. We're going to walk out of Boston knowing they did what they had to do. They won two games at home, and we're going to have to reciprocate. And the thing that I don't want is, and there won't be, there's not going to be a pity party. We're not going to sit in there and, you know, have a bunch of second thoughts or second guesses. I'm not going to let them.
He might be from Maine, but Brett Brown's in a lot of trouble right now in Boston. They're not winning a game in Boston. Philadelphia is in the deep end. Someone's got to throw them a life preserver because they don't know how to swim, and they got problems. And without home court, this was my point when it started. How can you favor Philadelphia where they haven't been here before? You have Brad Stevens in home court. I don't care about Kyrie's injury. I don't care about Gordon Hayward. They got veterans on that team. There's J.J. Redick, who shot the lights out last night for a team in Philadelphia that needed to shoot better from behind the arc and did. They were great in the first half. And then they fell apart. That's not coaching? You sure? That's not coaching when you're up 22 and you blow it like that and you choke like that and now you're down 2-0? I don't think you need to have a pity party, but congratulations. If you win both games in Philadelphia, win all three. If you don't win in Boston, you can't win the series. It's that simple. It's that easy. And I think it's a big problem right now for Philadelphia. Let's talk to Mike DiPrisco from Celtics blog on the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Hotline. Mike, Matt Perrault, how are you?
I'm doing good. You know, up 2-0 right now. Talking to you again, up 2-0. So
things are good. All right, so in terms of what happened last night to Ben Simmons, I have said, and I said it going into the series, that I thought Joel Embiid was a major problem. I did not think Ben Simmons was going to be a big problem. I got into a pretty fun conversation with Paul Flannery from SB Nation about it. He thought the exact opposite. Why do you think Ben Simmons is having such a tough time in this series?
You know, I think that the way the Celtics have game planned to defend him, they're just highlighting every weakness that he has. And that big weakness is the jump shot, obviously. So with the way Miami guarded him with smaller players, because they didn't really have the personnel to lay off of him a lot, because he could just get a running start to the rim, go straight in, and get a finish or kick it out. But with Boston's ability to put Al Horford on and put Marcus Morris on him, even, you know, Jaylen Brown, sometimes Marcus Smart, they can afford to play off of him and meet him at the rim and give him a lot of trouble. So I feel like they have the personnel and the scheme to just slow him down. Mm. And so I think that's been a major part of it. I also think that it's starting to get into his head a little bit how Brad Stevens is daring him to score and he's not having an easy time at it.
I think it's a great point, and we played the clip in the last segment about where he said, you know, Miami was way tougher. That this is one of those immaturity moments in my mind where a youngster doesn't really understand that when it comes to Boston, you don't want to compare Boston and anybody else, but you really don't want to compare Boston and Miami. And when you go back to Boston, you're going to have a problem hearing it from the fans. And I think you're right. I think Brad Stevens is squarely in his head. And look, I don't believe Philadelphia can win a game at TD Garden. Do you?
No, I don't think so. Like you said before I came on, they're a young team. They're still trying to figure it out. And you have a Celtics team that is obviously using that crowd as an advantage in the way they generate runs off of it. And it's a tough building to play in. If you've ever been there, I'm sure you have. Mm-hmm. It is rocking in there when that team goes on a run, especially the fact that they've been treated as underdogs the first two games.
Right.
And just have more juice.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you have Brad Stevens, which is, look, I don't know if he's the best coach in the NBA, but he's a much better coach than Brett Brown, and he's got his guys more prepared. I thought it was a really telling press conference after game one where Joel Embiid just said we weren't ready, you know, we weren't focused, we were lackadaisical. They had 6 days off before that first game. Boston had a day and a half off to prepare, and Boston looked far more fresh and far more prepared. And then in game two, we knew that the shot was going to fall a lot more than game one for Philadelphia, but up 22, What happened in your mind to Philly? I mean, how did they blow that lead?
I think the Celtics started to calm down a little bit. You know, they sustained that initial punch by the Sixers with J.J. Redick hitting everything he looked at. But they, you know, they got more, and you know, the Celtics were turning the ball over and leading to fast break opportunities. So I think that they calmed down, especially Jason Tatum and Terry Rozier calmed down, started using their defense, get the crowd involved, hit the open shots as they came, and they used the crowd. I really think that the crowd gave them an extra push, and it certainly helped that Brett Brown didn't call a timeout and just let them right back in the game right up until halftime.
Yeah, it's a great point. I couldn't figure out what was going on at the end of the first half. Boston, I thought if Boston got the lead down under 15, that was going to be a big success. They got it down to 5. And speaking of calming down, I thought Jaylen Brown was sped up. And I don't blame the dude coming in after missing game one, first time playing the second round for him in this type of role and having, you know, the focal point. He was the leader in round one. He wanted to have a big impact in coming into a game where he was doubtful to play in the hamstring injury. I thought he was just like a half a step too fast throughout the entire first couple of minutes. And then once he calmed down, then I thought the entire team started to follow suit and calm down, and they started to play their brand of basketball. What'd you make of the return of Jaylen Brown, the 25 minutes he played, and going forward, how concerned are you with that hamstring?
Well, it was interesting to see him out there because he certainly showed the explosiveness that he's had all year, even though every time he landed, it looked like he hurt himself after running down a loose ball for a dunk or even just going up for a lob, catching and throwing it down. It seemed like every time he came down, he was hampered by it, but when he came out of the game, he got stretched out and he came right back in. And I think he said after the game that him and the training staff had a good plan in mind and they executed it well. Every time he was out, he was just getting stretched. And, you know, when he was able to play 25 minutes, I didn't think he was going to play 25 minutes. Mm. But yeah, I mean, it makes me nervous just because you never like to see one of your best players, you know, hobbled on the court. And you certainly don't want a strain to turn into a tear. But as long as he feels all right, and Brad Stevens usually has the best in mind for his players, I'm fine with him continuing. But as far as the game last night, I feel like, yeah, he tried to get involved quickly, taking a few bad shots, but then calmed down a little bit, started cutting. I feel like one of his best half-court traits is cutting to the rim where Horford or Rozier can find him on backdoors. Because when Covington's on him, especially, Covington tends to fall asleep and allow easy backdoor for dunks. Mm-hmm. And that certainly gets Jaylen Brown going.
Absolutely. Mike DePresco, Celtics blog, joining us here on Pushing the Odds. It was interesting to hear Brad Stevens, at least through the reporting on ESPN last night, where Brad Stevens said through a reporter that he was not going to play Jaylen Brown unless he was 100%, and Jaylen Brown didn't listen to that, and Jaylen Brown said, "I'm playing." And then he comes into the game, and it was obvious he was not 100%. I mean, within the first 2 seconds, he picks up the loose ball, he goes in, he dunks on that steal, he lands. And I got to be honest, Mike, I thought the face he made meant he was done. I didn't think he was going to play after he came down. I mean, he looked uncomfortable the entire game. Is this just a pain management thing in your mind? Because you mentioned the fear of a tear. I mean, they're just going to have to manage it throughout the rest of the series, right?
Yeah, I mean, hammies are so tricky, because it's all about how much you extend yourself. And Brown, with the amount of explosion that he does in his moves, there's always a concern. But yeah, like you were saying with the first play there, the Sixers called a timeout after that dunk, I think. And I was like, okay, the way he's not going to come back in. And
yeah.
And he's back on the court when we come back from commercial. And I'm pretty sure that happened 3 times or so during the game where he made a play, huge play, momentum-shifting play. He had a grimace on his face going to the sideline. He was limping, but then he was back out there after the timeout, which was just, it was bizarre. And it was very nerve-wracking considering the complexity of hamstring injuries. But I guess they have to manage that going forward. And I mean, if it's pain management, I mean, Brown will probably play through it.
Yeah.
But the way hamstrings are, I think they have to be careful.
Yeah, I would agree. Mike, can you get here on this? The series is shifting back to Philadelphia. I expect Philly to win game three. In fact, I'm not going to be surprised if Philly wins game three and four, given what happened in Milwaukee. But how much of a shot do you give Boston to steal one of these next two games?
Yeah, I think tomorrow is going to be tough. Game three, the Sixers, just like the Bucks, they are going to be desperate. And the crowd's going to be desperate. It's going to be really loud in there. Maybe the Celtics have a little more experience dealing with a crowd, because I felt like the Milwaukee crowd was rowdy in their own right.
Mm-hmm.
But I think game four might be their best chance to steal one, because especially if you look at the first round series, Celtics calmed down a lot more in game four and could have easily won that game. I'm not going to say that the Bucks and the Sixers are the same teams, but
mm-hmm.
I'm going to look at it that way. I don't expect to win game three, but game four might be the time to steal one.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think that's a great read. Mike, thanks for the time. Really appreciate it today.
Thank you.
That's Mike DePrisco, Celtics blog, joining us on the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Hotline. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. I haven't seen the line yet, but I'll give you a little gambling advice. First half, Philadelphia, whatever the line is, bet it. Philly's going to be on fire in that first half. And that is a sports team in a sports city that all of a sudden has gotten accustomed to winning. And they don't know what the hell's going on. They really don't. They've been absolutely cold-cocked by a 2x4 swung by Brad Stevens. And they, I mean, on Twitter, it's hysterical. I mean, our friend Eitan Shander and other of my Philadelphia friends on Twitter, they just don't know what to make of this. What happened? What's going on? I don't understand. Where's our team? Why can't they shoot? Why? Because you're not playing Miami. That's why. You're playing Boston. This is the fun. This is what Philadelphia fans haven't experienced for a long time, because of the fact that you are up against one of the best coaches in the NBA who's doing things that it's leaving guys on TNT and ESPN, it's leaving them speechless. They don't know what to talk about. They don't know how to describe what they're seeing, where no matter who comes in, that person's doing exactly what that role is needed, what's needed for that role to be successful. And it's plug and play. Boston's plug and play. This is Bill Belichick versus Tony Dungy. Tony Dungy was a very good coach. Tony Dungy won a championship, okay? John Harbaugh, very good coach. John Harbaugh's won a championship. But when it comes time to go up against a coach who is superior in game planning and superior in preparation, you have a problem. And I'm not saying Brett Brown's a bad coach. I'm just saying he's not on the level of Brad Stevens. And yep, Bill Belichick has a resume that's really long and really amazing, and he's been to 10 Super Bowls with the Patriots, and he's won 7 as a coach, assistant coach, 2 with the Giants, 5 with the Patriots. It's amazing. Okay, so I'm not putting Brad Stevens in the same category, but what Brad Stevens is doing is Belichick-esque, and it is noticeable. He has separated himself noticeably when it comes to game planning and finding players who can come in and do exactly what is needed. Guys that nobody else really wanted, he finds a role for. Shane Larkin? Are you kidding me? I mean, this is what this roster is looking like. It's like the old school Patriots, where you had guys that nobody wanted, and all of a sudden, that dude turns into an all-NFL player or all-NBA player, and you're like, how? Terry Rozier was given the grade of an F. No, Tatum wasn't, and Jaylen Brown wasn't either. But Jaylen Brown was, in my mind, a project that's been very successful after 2 years with Brad Stevens, because he couldn't shoot, and the dude now can really shoot. Tatum is psychotic. Tatum has scored 4 consecutive games of 20 points or more for Boston. The only rookie to do that in Celtics history, a guy by the name of Larry Bird. Think about that for a second. More to come. It's Pushing the Odds, SB Nation Radio.